After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Pitch. Swing and a long drive, deep left, way back, gone!
Perfect. Welcome back to another episode of the 90th Percentile. Last week, we talked a little bit, compared and contrasted the two environments in terms of development between the United States and the Dominican Republic. We're going to expand a little bit more on that conversation today, as we like to do. So Matt, welcome to the show. Of course, Matt Pajak, my co-host alongside me, as always. I think we're going to start it off a little bit, and maybe there's some introductory stuff you want to drop first, but kind of give people an idea. We're going to talk a little bit about sport popularity in a variety of countries and how options sometimes can be a positive and a negative as well in this particular instance. So Matt, what's going on, man? How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. And Jeff, before we get into anything, I do want to shout out our non-sponsors, Capriotti's, best sandwich in America. Again, they are not our sponsors, but they are the best sandwich in America, Capriotti's. Now that we've gotten that out of the way, obligatory plug, they are not paying us.
Well done.
Yeah, thanks. Hopefully they hear this. Hey, we got receipts, you know. So we could create a reel from a bunch of different podcast episodes. Hey, we've been fans from day one. We nothing fake here. Anyway, yeah, options. I think the last podcast got a little bit messy with all of the different variables, and I think we went surface level and maybe a little bit deeper on some of them. But I'd like to be a little bit more focused on this one. And this doesn't necessarily have to be the United States versus the Dominican Republic and all that, but it is a very important variable. And it's a variable that's very different, the United States versus the land of opportunity versus the Dominican Republic and a number of other really successful baseball development countries where baseball is the only priority on the sports side. So, yeah, Jeff, I mean, I don't even really know how to kick this thing off. I think maybe the best way to say it is that, you know, what I just kind of said to you off air, like, you know, it's we live in a country where kids have a million options for how they want to entertain themselves on at any given moment, right? Do I want to play my Xbox, my PlayStation, my Nintendo Switch? Do I want to game on my iPhone or my iPad? And then once you figure out which one of those devices you want to game on, then you figure out what game you actually want to play, right? You know, adults finding movies or TV shows. Do I want to log into Hulu or Netflix or Max or Paramount Plus or Amazon Prime to try and find something to watch? It's just, it's too many options. I'm reading this book right now that Sean Campbell gave me called The Iconist. And it talks about how we all just get lost every day in like how much information, micro information that is being thrown at us. And it specifically referenced like, you know, a couple decades ago when there were three, you turned on the TV and there were three channels and that was it. So it was like, everybody was watching the same things. And now it's like, there are so many different streaming platforms and options for consuming content. And when you create a content platform like a Netflix or a Hulu or whatever it is, you have to fill it with content, right? You can't just have a streaming service and have like six movies and four TV shows on there. Like it has to be packed to the gills with docuseries and reality TV and all these different things. So you just have just like an absolute mess of garbage copycat content across all of these different, I don't know. It's America in a nutshell. That's where I'm going to cut myself off on this. It's America in a nutshell is that we just have too many options. You drive up the street like, hey, Jeff, where do you want to grab food? It's like there's a fast food spot that competes with the fast food spot across the street that competes with the fast food spot that's a quarter mile up the road. It's like, do I want a burger from there, there, or there? You know, they're all doing the same thing.
Yeah,
we're in the land of options.
I feel like at this point when I'm driving down the road, there's not enough options for what I actually want to eat. It's all the same nutrients like formed into different places with different spices on it. Like there's no like nutritional value. Now that I'm on my health kick, you know, thinking right. differently, change my mentality, you know, taking care of myself, all that stuff. But I can do that because I live in America, right? Yeah, I think that that's prevalent. And, you know, I think that the mentality of parents in this generation, and I'm speaking because I am a parent in this generation with three kids spaced by about 6 years. So I kind of have a good barometer of like the older set of millennial parents and the younger set of millennial parents. And I think that like we were forced to do things a lot more when we were kids. Like it was a bigger part of our day to day. Was doing things that were non-preferred activities. And I feel like that is not as consistent nowadays. So you don't have as many kids playing baseball at the entry level because there's a certain point where kids are like, they do it for a year. They play, I don't want to do it anymore. I'd rather do this. I'd rather do that. Certainly gaming. And I think the amount of time that kids are allowed to spend gaming has an impact on that. Like, you know, certainly my oldest, like, for example, just like wants to play video games all day long, right. where like I only had certain hours that I could play video games. And that was pretty normal. Like, I feel like most of my friends couldn't just play video games all day long if it was a nice day during the summer. You know, there was also an element, I think, of like the mentality around like protection, too. There's a lot more guardrails for kids now than there were years ago. We were kind of just like sent out of the house into my neighborhood and just like let loose for hours at a time without cell phones or other devices. And your mom had to like drive into the neighborhood and like find you and like call your name, you know? So I think there's just a different setup too. And we've seen the evolution of that. Now it's also led to maybe more focus and funds being spent, and training isn't as, I'll say, like, back in the day, you went and you just played baseball in your neighborhood. You played sports in your neighborhood. You played for your town team. Maybe there was some sort of clinic or camp that you could go to during the summer or on off days, you know, after school or something. Now that stuff is incredibly prevalent, right? So I think a lot of it, I will say, like, though they train maybe less, they play less, there's more options. I think the people who are dedicated to a sport, and that's one of the advantages of the United States, is they can spend more time and focused resources working with professionals. Folks like that weren't as readily available as they are nowadays, where no matter where you are, you
there's
can
way find more structured everything,
whatever. Yeah. There's a million kids training athletic, you know, places where you can just go and do like actual athletic training to build speed and strength, et cetera. That stuff didn't exist in, you know, 2000.
Yeah, and I think this is a completely different discussion, which I think would be a really good one to get into maybe next week. But the, you know, structured play versus unstructured play, because I'm with you, Jeff. Like when I was in middle school, you know, Friday, we would all go over to, you know, someone's house and like all the kids would come out and play in the neighborhood. And it's like you would just, you know, whatever you had available, if you had a tennis racket and a tennis ball and you wanted to play baseball and you played, you know, tennis racket baseball, right? Street hockey. You know, whatever it was, touch football, make up your own rules. You know, sometimes it was one hand touch, two hand touch. Sometimes when the parents weren't watching, we would tackle each other, you know, like that's how it was. And then like the sun would go down and then you'd play video games till 3 o'clock in the morning. You know what I mean? Like now it's like, let's skip that first part and let's just go straight to playing video games till 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. And I'll try to tie this back, you know, sort of into everything. And I think that sport choice now is much more driven by outside influences that are dedicated to promoting a certain thing. A league, watching a video on YouTube, stuff like that. You think LeBron James is cool because you're in a movie. Where I think, and this is a point that you just made, I think a lot more of it back then was like word of mouth. Like you went out, you played, you were around people. And so like maybe you tried baseball and you were better at it than you thought you would be. You had a nice hit, or you played football and you were catching stuff, or you throw the ball better, or you run fast and you were able to beat somebody and score a touchdown in the backyard. Like I felt like that stuff encouraged you to want to play sports. Like I remember I played soccer for a few years because I played like soccer with my friends after the World Cup, like in a similar situation, and like right. scored a bunch of goals and was like, I want to try soccer, you know, like, so like, I feel like there's that too. And you don't really see that anymore.
Yeah. And again, just another completely different topic. And then we'll get back to options, is like with how expensive it is to play sports now in the United States, you know, travel club, whatever it is at a young age, I wonder how many parents are viewing sports as an investment and a potential opportunity down the road for their kid, as opposed to just like, I'm signing my kid up to play on this team because they're going to have fun and they're going to be running around with other kids. And like, this is, you know, this is what you do as a kid, is you play sports. You know what I mean? I feel like the percentages have probably shifted pretty considerable. And there's probably way more parents out there nowadays, if I had to guess, that think that when they sign their kid up for 10U baseball or whatever it is, like this is the first step in their development towards becoming a Division I baseball player or a professional. And like everyone has, you know, kind of that dream that their kid becomes that at some point. Whereas like, I can tell you right now, my parents, when they signed me up for baseball when I was 10 years old, even when I was, you know, 12, 13, 14 years old, like that was never a thought. It was kind of like, all right, he likes playing baseball, and yeah, this is what kids do. They play sports, you know? Yeah, I don't know. It's, again, this is such a depthy, I don't think that's a word, well, conversation.
But I'm trying to tie it back in, like just in terms of the amount of choices that are available to, and the way the decision-making process has evolved here in this country. Right. You can play badminton. Kids could go and play badminton. There's a curling thing down the road for me. I mean, these are weird sports you could not have played years ago. Lacrosse is a much bigger thing here in New England than it was when I was young. There were no lacrosse. I wanted to play lacrosse because it was similar to hockey, and I thought it would be a perfect like summer right. spring sport for me. And the closest place that I could go was Duxbury, which was about 45, 50 minutes from my house, you know, one way. And we were already doing that for hockey. My parents were like, no, that's not the case anymore. So I think like the amount of choices in terms of sport has really grown astronomically over the last 25 years.
Yeah. And I think it's really important that we establish that like living in this country, we're very fortunate to have options. Mm-hmm. We're fortunate to have all these options and be able to try different things. We're fortunate to be able to go to a city and be able to try worldly cuisines in close or, you know, the same representation that you get if you went to that country, because we have immigrants in this country that have come and they've brought their culture and their cuisine. We're very fortunate that we have all of those things, because there's a lot of countries out there that just aren't granted those opportunities right around the corner. Right. So I think that's really important, is that like, it's nice that a kid can be like, hey, I want to play basketball and I don't want to play baseball, or I want to play baseball and I don't want to play soccer, or I want to play both, or I want to play all three, you know? I think that is nice. And I'm not by any means suggesting anything to the contrary. However, I think it's an important variable to consider. And really this whole podcast episode is just a perspective piece. It's just like, let's look outside of what we live day to day and consider that, okay, in the Dominican Republic, it's baseball. A handful of people play basketball and a handful of people play soccer, but it's baseball. Now here in the United States, like, baseball is the third most popular sport, and there are very popular sports behind baseball as well. So in terms of like options in competing for, I guess, attention or competing for kids. The United States is in a completely different scenario than a Dominican Republic, or I'm going to just run these down because I looked them up. Most popular sport in Curacao, baseball. Most popular sport in Venezuela, baseball. Most popular sport in Cuba, baseball. We looked up what, Panama, most popular sport, baseball. All right. So like, these are the countries that are, I guess, if you look at population statistics per capita, producing more professional baseball players than the United States. But that's also because that's the only option. And again, that's not the only reason. There's other reasons too, but I think that's the point of this is like, all right, here in the United States, like if I'm a kid and there's this concept called ignition, which I bring up a lot with Loden Sports, and it comes from the book Talent Code. It's like, what are the things that ignited you at a young age to play your sport? Right. And it can be a moment. It could be like going to a baseball game or a football game, you know, and seeing something that you think is really cool. And now that's your favorite player and the play that they made and all that. Now you want to grow up, you want to be like them. Right. It could be an older sibling or a cousin or someone in the neighborhood who plays a sport and you want to grow up and you want to be like them. You know, it could be, you know, something like a hobby, like, okay, I grew up collecting baseball cards. Like, that drew me to it. You know, I watched football games with, you know, my uncle. It's like, okay, that drew me to football, right? These are all the different things that kind of like as a kid, you know, make an impression on you and then kind of shape your decision-making moving forward. So I think that is kind of important to consider, is that there are environmental factors that kind of push kids in a certain direction towards a certain sport. And kind of help make that decision for them what sport they're going to play. Now, there's a completely different element of this, and that's a genetic element. Like, we're not all born at a certain size or with certain raw athleticism and physical gifts. And there's only a certain number of those kids within a community. And if that community is geared towards football, then your best athletes are probably going to play football in that community. Now, I bring this up with a specific example. Spencer Jones, Yankees first rounder in the 2022 MLB draft, 6'7", 230 pounds, grew up in Southern California, right? And he is an outlier athlete. Now, if that guy is born in a community where every kid grows up wanting to play Friday Night Lights, he's probably a 4 or 5-star tight end recruit out of high school and not a baseball player. But he grew up in Encinitas, California, which is Southern California, and baseball is really popular in Southern California. So again, there's environmental factors, you know, regional factors, local factors that kind of contribute to like what sports are our athletes choosing to pursue. It's just not a factor in the Dominican Republic. If you're an athlete in the Dominican Republic, like, you're playing baseball.
Yeah. And it's not like there's a ton of other options or choices, and you're also going to be pushed that way, as you said, you know, depending upon what community, you know, you're within in this country or a lot of places within the world, it's going to push you one way or another, you know. And there's certainly benefits in other sports if you play multiple sports as well. I think the good example I've always heard on that one is like, some of these bigger NBA centers, in particular like the 80s and 90s, like Patrick Ewing, who grew up really in Jamaica before he moved to the United States and Massachusetts, and then Hakeem Olajuwon, who had great footwork for big men. And I think a lot of that was like trained with soccer, you know, which is what's kind of funny. And then, you know, guys come to another country, get an opportunity to play a different sport that maybe fits them a little bit more. But I don't know, I wonder if, you know, those guys end up playing soccer if they're born in America, right? You know, big guys that probably, depending upon what community they're in, end up playing basketball or potentially football. So that does have, you know, a huge impact on it as well.
Yeah, I mean, just look at Patrick Mahomes, right? Patrick Mahomes was a Division I level player in high school in baseball, football, and basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Right, he could have committed and played Division I basketball, baseball, or football. Right, and he chose football. right? Patrick Mahomes, in that same scenario in the Dominican Republic, plays baseball.
Yeah.
There's no football to pull him away. There's no basketball as another option. Patrick Mahomes is a baseball player, and that's it.
Yeah.
Right. Giancarlo Stanton's another example. I know that Giancarlo Stanton is well documented as having been a three sport star in high school. Like, he chose baseball. Walker Martin, three-time state champion quarterback at Eaton High School. He also chose baseball, but like, he could have chosen football instead of baseball. And instead of the Giants giving him $3 million in the draft, like, he's not in the baseball pool. He's in the football pool. He's going and playing football somewhere, right? Like, Billy Martin at Slammers told me that, like, Garrett was a Division I level basketball player as well, and he chose to pursue baseball, right? So, like, these are the kinds of things where it's like, okay, Garrett Martin, Walker Martin, Patrick Mahomes, Giancarlo Stanton, and a laundry list of other guys who played multiple sports in high school that chose baseball. Drop them in the Dominican Republic, they're all playing baseball.
Yeah.
All of them.
Full time.
Right? So maybe that's like, okay, Ellie De La Cruz, Wander Franco. I hate to use Wander Franco as an example, honestly. Give me some other names. Okay. Vidal Bruján, Ellie De La Cruz, O'Neill Cruz,
Fernando Tatis Jr.
Okay. You take those four guys, and let's say that they're all three sport athletes in high school and they grew up in the United States. How many of those guys are ending up in Major League Baseball? How many of those guys are pursuing professional baseball?
Yeah,
maybe one or two of them. But when you look at Ellie De La Cruz and O'Neill Cruz, you can't tell me that basketball programs in Division I football programs wouldn't be salivating over those types of athletes. Yeah. I don't know. Grew up in the Dominican Republic. There was one option, baseball. That's what they pursued.
Yeah, 100%. I think, there's a guy, Henry Lalane. He's a 6'8 pitcher who's Dominican. Father actually played Division I basketball here. But I kind of wonder if, he grew up here full time. Didn't spend any time in the Dominican Republic. He's 6'8, 6'9, and pretty athletic, big left-hander. I wonder, is like that guy, what is that guy? Is he a basketball player if he grows up in the United States, full time? And doesn't grow up in the Dominican Republic. So, obviously, really, really interesting talent. Another guy that's kind of in that same mold as O'Neill Cruz or Ellie De La Cruz just on the mound. Well, I guess, the other thing here too is sort of, where does baseball fall in the United States on the popularity list in comparison to some of these other countries that produce a lot of players? Obviously, there's a lot more population and resources here, so it's different story, but I know you had pulled some of those numbers too, just in terms of where baseball falls in these different countries.
Are you saying here in the United States?
Yeah. I know you alluded to it earlier, but I didn't know if you had
the exact number. I don't know what the exact numbers are. I know we looked it up, I think, last week before we ran that last podcast, but I know football and basketball are well ahead of baseball at this point. I don't know if it's something that you can look up. Before we move on from that last subject, I kind of want to hit you with the reverse, not the reverse. I'm not going to hit you with the reverse. I'm going to hit you with I'm going to go back and I'm going to talk about something. When I said options in this country we're very fortunate to have all of these options. I think it's really important that we also mention that when we have all these options, I think you can get decision paralysis. And that's something that isn't really a factor in some of these other countries. So I think, whether you're an athlete or a non-athlete listening to this podcast, just like, consider the perspective that, like, being a little bit more deliberate about how you sift through options might eliminate some noise in your life. And I promise I'm going to segue this in to the multi-sport athlete that goes to college and wants to play multiple sports. Right. And I had this conversation with a young player a couple weeks ago, and it wasn't about playing multiple sports in college, but it was about committing to something. And if you're not 100% committed to something, if you're only 90% in and you're 10% committed to something else, or in some of these cases with these kids that go and they play multiple sports in college, they're 50-50 or they're 60-40 or whatever it is. Like, if you're not fully in on one of those things, you're not giving it enough, because the people that you're playing with, the other athletes that are on your team and that you're playing against in those sports, are giving it 100%. There isn't another sport that's taking any of their attention, right? So I think that we have a handful of really special athletes that can go and play multiple sports in college. But I think the majority of the athletes that try and play multiple sports in college aren't on that level to be able to go out amongst, you know, their peers in one sport, having given 50% commitment to that sport where everyone else is 100% in, and be able to stand out. And I think that's where some guys hurt themselves, right? So I'm going to give you an example. Who is the kid, Brandon? Do you remember Brandon McIlwain?
Yeah, I know the name.
So Brandon McIlwain, I'm pretty sure he was a prospect out of high school. He was like Northeast Area Code team and East Coast Pro and the whole deal. And he was committed to, I think, South Carolina to play baseball and to be a quarterback. And he was just okay as a quarterback. Like, he got a chance to play early and he was just okay. And on the baseball field, he was also just okay. And then he ended up transferring. I think he ended up at Cal. And he did both there too. And again, as a quarterback, he was just okay. And on the baseball field, he was just okay. And then I think the 2020 draft happened. He didn't get drafted, and he signed for $20K. And I think he's in the Met system. There's a chance that he's still kicking around in minor league baseball. But you sit there and you say, okay, well, what would Brandon McIlwain have become if he made a decision at 18 years old to pursue one or the other and go all in, instead of this decision paralysis or this attempt to play both that ended in, you know, like, look, he got to play Division I football and he got to play Division I baseball at a high level, but like, it's probably not the outcome that they saw at 17 or 18 years old. They probably saw the NFL or Major League Baseball at some point, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing to consider, is that like, Brandon McIlwain's not the only example of that. There's a lot of guys that, you know, the quarterback at UCF right now, John Rhys Plumlee. John Rhys Plumlee, for the first, I think at UCF he's technically on the baseball roster too, right? I don't know. That's just another thing to consider, is that like, these kids, you know, Will Taylor was another example. He turned down really good money in the first round of the MLB draft from multiple teams to go to Clemson so that he could play for Dabo. And ultimately, 2 years later, he's made a decision that he's going to pursue just baseball. And look, he's still, you know, very much a prospect, and I think he's going to do well for himself. And I don't think he's like a McIlwain case, but hey, man, like, the same money might not be there, right, that was there when you were coming out of high school, because
yeah,
he was potentially a top 10 pick.
I didn't realize that McIlwain was a quarterback, actually. Yeah, he's in AAA. He's with Syracuse of the Mets right now.
Yeah. How's he doing? Like, does he have a shot, or is he just kind of there?
I think he's just kind of there. I'll pull up the numbers again, but yeah, I mean, you know, it's like high on base percentage. He's got a little bit of power. He's got a little bit of speed. But it's AAA numbers, so they always look a little bit better
right
than they should be. He's been there the entire year. So 256 average, 357 on base percentage, 12 home runs, 17 steals, over 426 at bats.
Yeah,
he just got promoted to Syracuse from Binghamton at the beginning of August. So,
yeah, I mean, I think there's just the resounding message here is just options. It's like, that guy had the option to try and pursue playing two sports. A lot of these guys have the option to try and play two sports. It's like, okay, here are your options. Like, sign for a couple million dollars out of high school, or go to school and attempt to play two sports at the same time. You know, even for the guy that's not a multi-sport athlete, it's like, we have options here in the United States with the the amateur draft where it's like, okay, I'm committed to go to college and I potentially get offered some money out of high school. I can turn it down and I can go to school. I can say that's not enough, or I can take it. Again, going back to the Dominican Republic or Venezuela or, you know, anywhere in the international market, it's like you, if you get offered money, you just take it and you go. Because there's not a second option. There's no leverage. There's no like, oh, I got a commitment to UCLA. It's like, okay, well, if you don't want the money at 15, like going back to our conversation last time, like if you're 17 or 18 years old in the Dominican Republic, you might as well not exist. So options, United States, option city. And it's a good thing, but it's just, you know, there's factors there like decision paralysis that just don't come into play elsewhere. There's factors like leverage that don't come into play elsewhere. I mean, Jeff, like it, without knowing players specific or without giving specific examples, both you and I have been around players that have turned down millions of dollars out of high school that went to college and disappeared. Right.
Yeah.
Like that happens every single year.
Yeah.
Right. There's one or two guys who it's like, oh, you know, I wanted 2.5 and I only got offered 1.8 and then they go to college and then they're a non-draft. You know, yeah. There's a very specific example in my head right now. It's like
guys that sign as NDFAs or, you know, later round picks for minimum bonuses that were, you know, considered fairly high draft picks out of high school.
Right. Options, you know, sometimes options bite you in the ass. All right. So again, anybody who's listening to this, make sure you're very, very thoughtful on how you go about sifting through your options.
Sometimes people make bad decisions when they have options. You know, they go to Subway instead of Capriati's right across the street.
Exactly. Capriati's on every corner. That's the American dream in 2024.
Not going to happen. You want to wrap this up, jump into something else, save it for next week? What do you say?
Yeah. Wrap this thing up. Put a bow on it, Jeff. It's Christmas in September. Yeah. End it.
All right.
Finish him.
That's been the 90th percentile. For Matt, I'm Jeff. Thanks for tuning in.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.